Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, honoring Arbor Day on April 26th, with an ongoing commitment to sustainable stewardship and conservation of Missouri's forests. ChooseWood.com.
Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jim Kircher. More than two millennia after the ancient orator Demosthenes refined his speaking style by talking with pebbles in his mouth, great speeches continue to play a significant role in our world. That enduring impact on public life especially, as well as the value of public speaking skills for everyday contexts, is in the spotlight during Optimist International's Oratorical World Championships this week, taking place at St. Louis University. The competition runs Thursday through Saturday with several sizable scholarship awards awaiting the winners. Joining me in the studio to talk about the enduring and evolving craft of speech-making is Rebecca Butler-Mona, president of Optimist International. And we also have two other guests today joining us remotely. Professor Wayne Fields is the Lynn Cooper Harvey Chair Emeritus in English at Washington University and the author of Union of Words, A History of Presidential Eloquence, among other books. Also joining us is Justice Hill, who's a past winner of the oratorical competition. He won the $5,000 third-place prize in 2016 in the World Championships, and he's now headed into his sophomore year at SLU. Rebecca, Wayne, Justice, thanks for coming on the program today.
Thank you, Jim. Good to be here.
Pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for coming in, guys. And Rebecca, well, first of all, the Optimists have been holding this oratory competition. Of course, Optimist Club International is a service club devoted to youth programs of all kinds. But you've been doing this for a long time. Why today do you think it's still important to do oratory?
Well, that's a great question, Jim. And you're right. Actually, our Optimist Oratorical Contest is our longest running program for Optimist International. We actually began in 1928, so quite a long time. But this is the fourth year we've had our World Championship. But we see this as probably as relevant as ever it's been in history because, you know, that ability to communicate effectively, to create a compelling story, to be able to persuade your point of view is a valuable skill. You know, we're told that public speaking is everybody's number one fear, you know, even greater fear than death itself, we're told. So something that to be able to overcome that fear is very important. And today, you know, as we have so many people who are communicating through briefed text messages and through social media and email, that ability to communicate effectively through a verbal exchange is almost a lost art and one we think is really important to preserve.
Yeah, is it still popular? How many people are actually competing in these championships? And you're covering a wide area here, so
we are, and we do still have a very very competitive race. I will say literally thousands compete in the various levels of our competition. So I will just briefly on that, you know, our contest begins with the local club level. So we've got about 2,500 Optimist clubs throughout our organization, and they can have a contest at a local level. Those winners advance to what we call a zone, so kind of a smaller region. And then we have a district championship, and we have about 50 districts across Optimist International. At that level, they earn a $2,500 first place scholarship. We also give a second and third place. It's those winners who then advance to be here with us. We added this world championship here in St. Louis at St. Louis University in 2016. So we're going into our fourth round, and there's some serious money at stake. So I think that's one of the, as a parent of a student going off to her freshman year of college, I can tell you scholarships are important. And so the top winner has a chance to earn actually $22,500 from the various levels. So that has kept the interest very high.
Justice, you're a college student now. What got you interested in say entering this contest in the first place? This was a few years ago, but have you always been a good talker, or was this something you just thought you'd give it a shot and see?
Well, I've been told that I've always been a good speaker, but my father was the one who really introduced me to the sound of my own voice, and the head of the school at my high school, Heathwood Hall, told me about the Optimist International Oratorical Contest and said that I should apply, and I ended up applying and doing well at the local level, then the state level, then went on to the national level, then to the world championship level. But really what has inspired me to speak is just what comes with inspiring others, like through the power of my voice. I like to let my light shine And by letting my light shine, I want to encourage others to let their light shine.
Yeah, Professor Fields, I'm wondering from the academic standpoint, historical standpoint, we're in the debate season, so we know that public speaking is still an important skill to have in certain fields.
Well, democracy itself depends upon reasoned discourse as a form of persuasion as opposed to simply power or force itself. And so from the very beginning, especially in the United States, there's been a heavy emphasis both in education and in our general consideration of political institutions, of the quality of talk that not just leaders but citizens themselves are capable of. One of the first appointments Thomas Jefferson made when he created the University of Virginia was a professor of rhetoric and oratory, and John Quincy Adams held that position at Harvard for a while. So, you know, from the very beginning, we've understood that the quality of talk and the quality of democracy are inseparable.
Yeah, is speech making or speech and oratory, is that still taught? Of course, you're always going to run across people who say, you know, schools aren't doing enough, this is being dropped. Is it still something that is part of an education?
Well, it's an erratic pattern, it would seem to me. The sense of its importance has been diminished a lot over time, and we have tended to think of rhetoric almost always in negative terms. As a consequence, the responsible use of persuasion, as opposed to simply teaching people how to write better academic papers or how to perform effectively with a certain kind of glibness, has not gotten the attention at any level in American education in recent years. That not only it deserves, but that democracy requires.
So in the actual competition, Rebecca, every year there's this, you've got rules, you've got a topic. I'm reading the how things are judged, poise, content of speech, delivery and presentation, and overall effectiveness. The topic this year?
The topic this year is there a fine line between optimism and reality? And it's always intriguing to see how the individuals participating can take a topic like that and come at it from a number of different perspectives and deliver some very, very interesting discussion. The coming year's topic is just imagine a world without boundaries. So we try to give them something they can really work with and portray a point of view.
Yeah, and certainly, Justice, the presentation is maybe what people focus on. But structuring a 4 to 5 minute speech is at least half, if not more, the battle than just the presentation. How long did you work on, and it has to be at least 4 and no longer than 5, right? So, Justice, these are pretty restrictive requirements. How did you go about that?
I approach memorizing my speech and by practicing it every day. Preparation is key, and I feel that, like you said, presentation is more important than the content, but day in and day out, I practice my speech sometimes 10 times a day because I realized I had an opportunity to do something very big, not only for myself, but for my state, my family, and for everyone I know. So when it came to preparing for the 2016 Optimist International Oratorical Contest, that year's topic was how my best brings out the best in others. I really just thought about all the people who really inspired me in my life and allowed me to be the young man I am today. So thinking about that really allowed me to become one with this speech and ultimately lead to the success that I had in the competition.
Yeah, I'd like to invite our listeners into this conversation in case you have, if maybe you need some advice on how to make a speech or a presentation. If you've got a question or comment about this topic, give us a call. We're at 314-382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Or you can send us a tweet at STL On Air or email us at talk@stlpublicradio.org. For any of you, I think one of the most common questions is, how do you get over the fear of public speaking? Some people have it and can't get over it, and some people figure out ways to get over it. Rebecca, do you get these questions going in, or do the kids who enter this already get over that fear?
Yeah, great question. I think that some of them are naturally comfortable and more inclined, and that's why they take that step, and somebody's seen that in them and encouraged them. But we've also had students who have a great story of a young woman named Dominique who was in our competition last year and actually suffered from a speech impairment herself, one that actually made it hard for her to say her own name, if you can imagine that. And so she was encouraged to start public speaking as a way to get over that fear, and did so well. She ended up in the top three in our world championship last year. So fabulous story. And sometimes it just comes with practice.
Justice, how did you practice your speech? Are you an in front of the mirror kind of guy, or in front of family, or what? What's your best advice?
My best advice, just like practice in front of a mirror. Before the competition in 2016, I actually gave a speech in front of my church. Sometimes while I was driving, I would just recite the speech. And nervousness is definitely like a big factor when it comes to public speaking. I feel that no matter how long you've been public speaking, every now and then you'll have those butterflies in your stomach of nervousness. But I like to use my nervousness as energy to really perform better. And my motto is stand tall and be bold.
Yeah, Professor Fields, you've looked at presidential speechmakers. Certainly, certain people come to mind. Ronald Reagan was considered the great communicator. I had the opportunity to see him at one of the conventions. I saw Mario Cuomo make a convention speech that blew people away. I heard Alvin Barkley was a great speaker at conventions. Does it still have the impact today? Can it still have the impact that it has had in the past?
Yes, it does. I mean, and in a number of ways. I mean, whenever there is a national tragedy that we have to contend with, it's often the president who has to address that in a way that both satisfies our need to mourn and points us towards a future. Reagan after the Challenger disaster, Clinton after the Oklahoma City bombing. We can think of lots of examples of that. It also is pivotal in terms of how we make decisions about our future, how we regard one another. Lyndon Johnson's speech on voting rights bill was important. FDR after Pearl Harbor, all those speeches were eloquent in terms of the beauty of the language, but it's also about the quality of thought and the legitimacy of the argument that's being made. I think that as long as we are trying to move together as a united people, the key to it is being able to hear our thoughts expressed in their highest form and in their best argued fashion if we're going to move anywhere.
We're going to continue our own interpersonal communication skills here in just a moment. We'll take a quick break, but we'll be back shortly to continue the conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.
Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, honoring Arbor Day on April 26th, with an ongoing commitment to sustainable stewardship and conservation of Missouri's forests. ChooseWood.com.
And now back to our conversation with Rebecca Butler Mona, president of Optimist International, Washington University Emeritus Professor Wayne Fields, and Justice Hill, former oratorical championship winner and current St. Louis University student. You know, as I was thinking about this, public speaking, we're really talking about public speaking, and I'm thinking preachers, teachers, politicians, people who need to make presentations, and people who need to make elevator pitches. They've got to get that down to 30 seconds or 45 seconds or whatever the requirement is. So while I think sometimes we do think that modern electronics is ending or maybe limiting the need for public speaking, Rebecca, you're probably thinking not.
Oh, I completely agree with you that the need is still there, you know, and that's part of where we thought that our competition is something to encourage people to recognize that. You know, it's funny, some of the examples you give, you know, some of our prior participants and winners that maybe people you've heard of are people like Vice President Mike Pence, who participated as a fifth grader in Indiana, actors like Julia Roberts, Neil Patrick Harris, who won as a 13-year-old in New Mexico, West Texas, and wrote about it in his autobiography. So some wonderful examples. And Another one, just recently, we had our Optimist International Convention in Louisville just a couple weeks ago. We had, as a keynote speaker, a young woman named Monica Hardin, who's a TV news anchor there, who credits getting her start in the Optimist Oratorical Contest in Kentucky, went on to be Miss Kentucky, and is now a news broadcaster. So definitely very relevant today.
Yeah, I want to go to the phones because I think people are interested in this topic. And Dick is calling from St. Louis. Dick, you there?
Yes, I had a question for Justice and perhaps a suggestion. What grade are you in at SLU?
I'm a rising sophomore.
Okay, rising sophomore. Okay, so you'll be a junior next year. Are you involved in debate at SLU?
Currently I'm not, but I was a senator for the Black Student Alliance. I'm a resident advisor. I speak at my church, St. Paul AME Church up there, very often. I'm in the learning community leadership for social change. I'm involved in multiple other activities, but not currently in debate.
Yeah, so Dick, you think debate's the way to go for some folks?
I think it would be a nice compliment. He's obviously got great skills and oratory, and I think back to my own experience. I was a shy kid in eighth grade, and when I went into high school, a nun kind of hounded me into getting into debate. I wound up getting a debate scholarship to college, and the story about President Kennedy was he was a gawky, sort of shy speaker until his dad took him out to meet over the summer with the head of debate at John Carroll University, which is another Jesuit university.
Yeah, I think there's all kinds of interesting stories about individuals who came up, and whether they had a speech impairment or they had the fear and the opportunity to, perform a little bit, to memorize. Helps them get over that particular hump. So I think by the time you get to the championships, the Optimist Oratorical Championships, you've gotten over those humps, but you've probably heard lots of stories about that, haven't you?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's, we have great examples of storytelling throughout. And as you say, when you have all those levels of competition, there's kind of a built-in ability to continue to practice to a broader audience. And as you do that, you gain confidence it's really quite something to see.
Have you been involved in speech? I was on the speech team in high school, and so I have to say this. I was on there with another St. Louisan now, John Vullo, who's a local actor and drama teacher. We came to St. Louis. The other guy on the speech team went to Hollywood. That was David Hasselhoff. But his speech was just one of those activities that I took to, and in fact, and it was what I remember is rewriting, throwing out one speech because it was so bad and just starting over. So the process of communicating and zeroing in on writing and rewriting and practicing in this particular case is really, really important.
Yeah, I totally agree. And on a personal note, I did participate in various speech competitions, both small group, large group, individual, was on the debate team as well, and also did theater. But, I think it's a great skill to have. And, I spent over 30 years at IBM in marketing executive roles as well. And being able to speak is definitely a skill that was very, very helpful to me.
Yeah, let's take another call. This one, Tom's calling from Webster Groves. Tom?
Yes, the professor mentioned the critical importance of rhetoric and dialogue, diacritical thinking for democracy. Even referring to the founders, Jefferson and John Quincy Adams. And it feels to me like, in the modern age, one of the problems with rhetoric is that it tends to be more superficial and doesn't really get to the meat and potatoes of the logic of policy decisions that we, or discussions that we need to have. And I'd like to put forward a possible topic for future, not only debate, but also for speechwriters, and that would be the only amendment I'm interested in anybody putting forward to the Constitution, and how would you word an enumerated right to privacy? It seems to me that everything hinges on the exact and specific wording, because it can have so many unintended consequences by getting it wrong.
Well, I want to throw this to Professor Fields. If I read the first part of this correctly, there's a question of style over substance. here. And I suppose, Professor, when you watch speeches, you can pick that out pretty quickly.
Well, most of us can, I think, in a way. I mean, there are a couple of related issues here. One is that ultimately, eloquence of a sort that's enduring and powerful depends on the quality of thought, not just upon the beauty of the language. Secondly, there is a profound moral responsibility that goes with any kind of rhetoric. When you're trying to affect the way other people think or the way other people act, that's not something to be taken lightly. And that's, in fact, what persuasion is about. So in order to do it well, it has to be carefully composed and deliberated, not just glibly spoken, so that in all of these events, there's this intense moral dimension to what we're doing, as well as a political necessity for it. So the constant tension between doing the best job you can in terms of quality of thought and the most effective representation of that thought is what drives things forward. I think mostly we recognize that when we listen to a speech like I Have a Dream. We know that it's about something more than the magnificence of the language. We realize the depth of the argument that has been developed all through the civil rights movement coming out in that moment. When we listen to the Gettysburg Address, we can read it almost like a poem on one hand. On the other hand, it's a powerful statement about the commitment that's required for the enormous sacrifice of this war that we were conducting over slavery in the Union.
Yeah, every time the issue of oratory comes up, the Gettysburg comes to mind for me because, and maybe this is, you can tell me if this is accurate or not, but everybody was waiting to hear the great orator, Edward Everett, who would speak for, what, an hour or something. And a couple of hours.
The text seems to go on forever anyway.
Yeah, but that's really a question. Let's talk maybe a little bit about the evolution of style. That oratory, even the word, sounds sort of highfalutin to me, as opposed to conversational. But has the style of and the effectiveness of oratory changed? And maybe we could start with Gettysburg and work from there.
Well, I think the style has changed in part because of new technologies and also because of the way we do our political business these days, and there is less patience, I think, with some forms of oratory that were viewed as entertainment in the past. I mean, the Lincoln-Douglas debates went on for hours, and huge crowds went to listen to them, not simply because there were the critical issues of the day being discussed, but because this was a central form of education and entertainment for the age. They went to the Chautauqua Circuit. They went over and over again to places where ministers gave long sermons, where representatives of social reform gave long speeches. Now we expect sound bites, and our tolerance for something longer really requires a kind of depth of skill and commitment in the speaker as well as the audience that we still can achieve, and we still do. But I think it's less an inherent part of the culture than it was 100 years ago.
Yeah, so we've got to ask this, since you've written about presidential speech making. What would you write about Donald Trump today? Where does he fit into what category, or is he in his own category?
Well, in a way, he's in his own category. He's a product of a modern technological age in which tweets and things like that have become enormously important in the way people think ideas are being communicated, although usually we're expressing our opinion as emphatically as we can in those contexts. But it's not argument in, I would say, the classical or traditional sense. Very little of it depends upon a logical argument that's being developed. It depends more upon a kind of matching instinct in the audience and the speaker than it does upon the quality of the speech. And so it's a different kind of communication than, say, what Kennedy was practicing in the inaugural or what Obama was practicing when he gave his speech about race relations in America. It has to be thought of, it seems to me, in a different way.
Yeah, and it still always leads to the line. that's going to be remembered. That's certainly. I wonder if the speech makers or the speech writers always know which line is going to be remembered, whether it's an iron curtain has fallen or whatever the quote might be. But today, if you're debating, you know in your mind what soundbite you want to make the news. So I think in writing a speech, if you're a politician particularly and being covered for television or radio or for any digital platform, you know what words you would like picked out for the next newscast, don't you think?
No, I think that's exactly right. The thing, though, is in a way, when you're a politician or a minister or a teacher, you're building over time. And the question of how that soundbite resonates next week with more information available, or how much it was just the thing of the moment and it disappears, is crucial, it seems to me, in terms of the effectiveness of policymakers and leaders in terms of giving us a sense of direction and a sense of who they are and where they're going.
Yeah, I think when the optimists have a competition for young people, those folks who succeed, those young people like Justice who succeed, they've got to jump on everybody else. But what about adults? I mean, and I wonder, Rebecca, in your position as becoming president of an international organization, were you ready for the public speaking requirements that came along with that job?
Well, you tried to be ready, right? You know, I mean, some of the things that help, of course, are, you know, even coming into the election once nominated is, you know, putting together, you know, like a 3-minute video of what your vision is and what are the goals that you have and how do you intend to go about it. So I guess in some ways that's a form of speech like we're talking about, but delivered via video for people to be able to consume at their convenience. But certainly any time that I visit clubs, districts, or on stage in front of over 1,300 people a couple of weeks ago in Louisville for our international convention, all of those involve public speaking. So kind of like Justice described it, you know, you try to be prepared, you try to have the key points you want to make, and you got a little bit of butterflies, and hopefully that's just to give you the energy to make it more impactful. But frankly, I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah. We're talking with Rebecca Butler-Mona, president of Optimist International, Washington University Emeritus Professor Wayne Fields, and Justice Hill, a former oratorical championship winner and current St. Louis University student. Justice, I'm not sure if you told us. Did you tell us what you're going to do when you grow up, because you're almost there, with all of this great public speaking ability that you have? How does that apply, do you think, as you go forward and at SLU and then beyond?
Right now, I have my I'm thinking about being a lawyer to use my voice for those whose voices that have been muted, as well as possibly being a politician or maybe even being a pastor. I really just want to use the power of my voice to reach the people. I've been told that I have a gift, and I want to use that gift to inspire others and inspire the next generation. Optimist International, they gave me a great platform in the 2016 Oratorical Contest, and it has opened many doors for me. I often say that they gave me a key to unlock the door of endless opportunity, but I had to turn the key and enter that door on my own. So with that, like when after I finished the contest, I was just inspired to continue to make my voice heard in the church, at school, anywhere. So right now I'm set on possibly being a lawyer, politician, or a pastor.
Well, okay, those are good choices. I'm wondering, with the restrictions of the 4 to 5 minutes, the topic that you had to address when you were in the competition, did those restrictions force you into a discipline that maybe you didn't have before in terms of public speaking?
Well, with the time limit, it definitely forces you to like get to your point, like make your main point at a certain time. But like after you continue to practice and rehearse, I mean, the time is no longer affects you. So, but I definitely feel that it's important to have the time limits, because as a speaker, you have to make your points and ensure that your audience is following you. I mean, if you're speaking for too long, you might lose your audience and they'll no longer listen to you. But 4 to 5 minutes is like that perfect time where people will follow you until the end and actually want to hear some more.
Professor, top three speeches you've heard, or top three presidents as speakers? How would you rate them?
Well, I mean, for Americans, the supreme rhetorical challenge belonged to Abraham Lincoln, and he rose to meet it. I think that the two inaugurals and the Gettysburg Address are, you know, transformative in all kinds of ways, and I would say that's the epitome. We aren't all called, thank God, to speak in those kind of circumstances, and we don't all have those kinds of gifts. But in that particular moment, it seems to me the penultimate realization of what oratory can mean in a nation as distressed and distraught as the United States was.
Well, we have our reading assignments there for the weekend. And Rebecca, very quickly, the championship goes on in St. Louis Thursday through the weekend.
We actually kick it off tonight. We have young people gathering there just to kind of meet and have a social, and we begin tomorrow morning. We have our global region happening then, and throughout the day we'll have each of the regions across predominantly U.S., Canada, Caribbean, and then Saturday morning our St. Lawrence region, our French-speaking participants. Then we'll announce all the regional winners, and the world championship with the top nine from everywhere will take place tomorrow or Saturday at 10 o'clock.
Great. Well, I want to thank all three of our guests for joining us today. Rebecca Butler-Mona, president of Optimist International, Washington University Emeritus Professor Wayne Fields, and Justice Hill, a former oratorical championship winner and current St. Louis University student. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.
Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, honoring Arbor Day on April 26th, with an ongoing commitment to sustainable stewardship and conservation of Missouri's forests. ChooseWood.com.